Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. Got a great episode for you this week. Al Horford, Boston Celtics big man, he joins me from the Celtics practice facility. I cover a lot of ground with Al, from his disappointment to not reaching a finals in Atlanta.
I think, you know, as you start to be in the league, the more years you start being here, you realize that it's not as easy to have those special teams to be able to get to the finals or to win a championship.
To his efforts to lure Kevin Durant to Boston.
I had some conversations with him, but nothing, you know, really came about. And I think that he kind of already had his mind made up of what he wanted to do.
All that and more next on the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. My guest this week is one of the biggest free agent signings in Boston Celtic history. And Boston Celtics have not had great luck with free agent signings. He's Al Horford, the Celtics center, and he joins me here on the podcast. Al, first, thanks for joining me. When you were thinking about signing in Boston, were you aware of the history of free agents kind of, I don't want to say turning their back, but a lack of success the Celtics have had with that?
Honestly, not really. You know, when I decided to come here, there was a lot of things that I considered, but I never stopped to think, you know, that we weren't able to get any free agents here.
What's your take on Boston 3 months in?
I think it's a very, it's an amazing city. I think the people here are very, very passionate, you know, about all their sports. That's something that I've learned really quickly. And it's awesome, the support that you see people from the city around their teams. And getting back used to the cold, that's been, you know, the biggest thing for me. I went to high school in Michigan, so yeah. It's been a while, but I've been, you know, I feel like the transition has gone smooth, and that's because Coach Stevens and a lot of the guys, the players, have made me feel comfortable and welcome.
Yeah, you're just getting into the cold weather season now. Mm-hmm. Once we get into January and February, that's when you start to really wonder, what the hell am I doing in the Northeast? I've had that experience in the past. Growing up where you grew up in the Dominican Republic, not exactly a basketball hotbed. Baseball, I would assume, mm-hmm. you know, around you was the more played sport. I know it was your father that played the game. Was that it? Was it just following in his footsteps, or was there more that drew you early into basketball?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, once I get a chance to look back on it, I think it has to do with my dad, essentially. I started to play baseball. My mom wanted me to play baseball. My grandfather played baseball, so it was a big deal. So I started playing baseball. I just took a more interest in basketball. I love watching baseball, but playing-wise, I just had a lot more fun playing basketball. So, looking at my dad, going to practice with him, you know, every day he would play in the Dominican League. I got a chance to travel with him through South America, growing up a little bit in Europe. So I got to just experience international basketball and things like that. So that's what really motivated me and drove me to be a basketball player.
Was it easy to get games out there were the kids that wanted to play basketball as much as you did?
It's funny because some kids played basketball, but honestly, for the most part, especially in the South American countries, I caught myself, we were playing soccer on the basketball court, like 5-on-5, like, you know, that's how we got caught playing. In Dominican, I was able to get more kids to play with me, and it's a popular sport. It's just that, you know, baseball, it's the number one sport.
Your father had a cup of coffee with a few NBA teams, traveled a bit in Europe. Were you going with him when he was playing in these cities, or were you sent just staying in the Dominican or wherever you were at that time?
No, I got a chance to travel with him a little bit. He played in Sao Paulo in Brazil, so I got to be there with him for about 7 months out of the year, and then I was able to go with him to France. He played in Monaco. I was a lot younger then, but that was all, you know, by the time I was 7-8, then, you know, then I settled in Dominican and just watched him there when he came in the summers.
Was it was it tough to see him just keep going off and try to follow his dream, and you guys kind of had to let him do that from afar?
Yeah, I mean, I think I had an understanding from an early age that that, you know, that our life was different, that he was traveling a lot. And that's what I understood as being a professional athlete, especially basketball player, that, you know, you're going to be on the road a lot and in hotels. And I actually loved the fact when I got to travel with him and be in hotels and, you know, having team meetings and, you know, he's getting tape in the hallway and, you know, just different things like that. So that's a lifestyle that I really enjoyed growing up. And for me, the translation, you know, was easy once I got to this point.
What's your favorite memory of that, all that you just described there, watching him? Was there a place or a...
Yeah, in Santo Domingo in the Dominican League, I was about 8 years old and they won the championship in the league that year, and his club had never done it. And my dad just, you know, played an outstanding series, and the fan base over there, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever seen any of the winter baseball games out there, but people out there are rowdy. So it was, I just never forget the atmosphere and the excitement for people, you know, and it was like the sense was playoff basketball here. Like it's like, but it's, I feel like it's more intense as far as the fans making noise. Like it was just a very unique experience growing up. And I just never forget that Game 7 and them winning it and us having to be escorted out of the building because we were the team that wasn't supposed to win. And, you know, they're throwing beer bottles and everything on the court and things like that. So, like, that was a very memorable moment for me.
Your dad was a pro. When did it hit you that maybe you want to be a pro or you can be a pro too?
Well, from a very early age, believe it or not, my biggest supporter was my mom. She always encouraged me, you know, to do anything that I wanted, basically. But once I told her I wanted to be a basketball player, and she kind of got her dreams shattered because she wanted me to play baseball, she was like, well, you know, I believe that one day you can play. You can be an NBA player, not a pro basketball, an NBA player. And she said that to me when I was about 7 years old, and, you know, it's as a kid, I believed it, and I really believed that I could, and I knew that I needed to, you know, work hard. And watching my dad and seeing everything that he did and how he approached his job every day, I kind of learned from that a little bit. But, you know, her kind of driving me into it, I really felt that, you know, I know a lot of kids say it, but, like, I actually felt that I could do it. But then realistically, when I was like, okay, I think I have a shot, was my freshman year in college, that I started to play a lot with the Gators. I felt then that I actually realistically had a shot to play.
Why Florida for you? Not exactly at that time a basketball powerhouse. Mm-hmm. You're this kid from the Dominican living in Michigan. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was it about Florida?
Well, several things, but the biggest thing was Coach Donovan and Coach Anthony Grant. And they're both with Oklahoma City right now. But they came and visited me, and I just felt like I had a real connection with them more than basketball. I felt very comfortable with those guys. I believed in what they were telling me. And you know, I just I liked the idea about going to class in shorts in the winter. Like, I was just thinking about Michigan. I was like, I don't have a car. I'm going to be having to walk on campus to go to class and all that stuff. And I went down to my visit in Florida. It was November, and it was, you know, 80 outside and sunny, and everybody was wearing shorts. And I was like, this is where I want to be.
And you play with Noah, who I would imagine personality-wise, you guys are like polar opposites in some ways. How was that relationship early on, and what did it develop into?
No, it was awesome. We were roommates as well. We shared one dorm room. So, you know, so it was funny. You would walk into our room, and, like, my half of the room was nice and neat, and his was like, you know, he would have, like, you know, McDonald's burgers, two-day-old burgers on the table and cups and just everything, shoes, just a mess. Just everything. That's how he was, right? But it was great. Joakim really has been a huge part in my development as a player. His work ethic is, you know, I compare him to anyone. You know, he's a guy that really, really worked hard, you know, when we were around each other, and really motivated all of us to be better, you know, on the court. And we were all so focused about doing the right things and getting to this level that I felt like he really helped me you know, be more focused, be more determined to get to this level, to the NBA, because that's, you know, that's what we wanted to get to.
Eventually. Were you guys, as freshmen, were you talking about the NBA even back then? Was that in your mind somewhere? Because neither one of you were kind of the blue chip prospects guaranteed to make it.
Yeah, we would say it, but it wasn't the main focus for us. I think that for us, we understood that there was a process we had to go through. We needed to be better as players. Like you said, we weren't, you know, picked out to be. So we understood that we needed to work on our bodies. We needed to work on our games and keep developing. And with Coach Donovan, we really just bought into what he was trying to teach us. And once we did that, you know, everything just got easier and, you know, we started being more successful.
So Florida, your best memory of your playing days at Florida?
On the court or off the court?
Well, I mean, both.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, believe it or not, I mean, the things that I remember the most and most fondly of were all the off-the-court stuff. But I would say on the court was definitely when we beat Ohio State for our second national championship. You know, I just felt that season was a grind because, you know, there was a lot of expectations. And even though we didn't feel the pressure, but we definitely, you know, all came back for that purpose, right, to try to win another national championship. So anything short would have been a disappointment. So it was just a big relief when that clock hit zero and, you know, we've done it again. So that was a special memory. And then off the court, I mean, I would say, man, there's just a bunch of stories, but we would go to there's like these natural springs in Florida, right? They're like rivers. It's like extremely cold water. And people would go down floating, tubing down it, like get on a tube and you flow down the river. Like that's what you did, right? So like we all went out there one time and we had a lot of fun. It was a very different experience. We met some interesting people out there, but we had a really good time. So that's definitely a very fond memory.
So when you get drafted third overall by Atlanta, at that time, do you want to go to Atlanta? Are you thinking, I just want to go as high as possible? What's your mindset going into the draft?
Going into the draft, you don't know where you're going to go. So my whole thing is I want to go as high as possible. Then when I realized that Atlanta had the pick, I was very happy about it because even though, I mean, I probably didn't know all the stuff that was going on with ownership and all the problems and everything, but I really liked that city when I went. When we spent a lot of time there. We played the SEC tournament there. We played the Final Four there. So I was very familiar with the city, and I was actually – I remember telling my parents, I was like, man, it would be awesome if I would get to play here. Like, this is such a nice city. And when it came up, I was static. And the group that we had there, we had a really young group, a lot of good players. So that was something that excited me from the bat.
Did your father want you to play in a specific place? Did he? What was his thought process?
No. I think, you know, he was just grateful I was going to be in the NBA, and my mom was as well, and I was too. And at the end of the day, people kept asking me, you know, what do you want to play? I was like, I don't care. I just wanted to play in the NBA. I want to be there, and I want to, you know, be a part of something special.
So you get to Atlanta, and you mentioned that is kind of a young group. I mean, are you happy there right from the start? I mean, what was going on with you this first year?
Yeah, no, honestly, I was very happy, very grateful to be there. We had a great group of young guys, and my whole thing was just to fit in with the group as quick as I could. And for us, that our whole goal that year was to make the playoffs. The Hawks hadn't made it in many years, and we had a lot of really good players: Zaza Pachulia, Josh Smith, Joe Johnson, Marvin Williams. We had a lot of pieces. So our whole thing was just to make the playoffs, and we did it that year. And that was it was mission accomplished.
9 years in Atlanta. I mean, you obviously had a lot of success there? But how disappointed, if that's the right word, were you to not have one of those teams, you know, get to a finals, one of those teams, you know, accomplish that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as you start to be in the league, the more years you start being here, you realize that it's not as easy to have those special teams to be able to get to the finals or to win a championship. And when you do have a special team, you have to make sure that you take advantage of your opportunities. You know, I think that, you know, the Celtics here were a perfect example when I got to the league, you know, with Garnett and all those guys. They won it their first year, and then, you know, after that, it was hard. They were always there in the talk, but, you know, those teams, you have to take advantage of that and embrace that position. And for me, you know, I felt like we had our chances, and yeah, we couldn't get it done. So for me, it was, you know, time to move forward.
The 60 wins you had in 2015, does that season linger in your mind maybe more than most?
I think it does. It does, because I felt like that year we had a special team. I felt like we had all the pieces put together, and we lost Tabo Sefolosha late in that season, and he was such a big difference maker. I don't think people understood the impact that he brought to the team. And then, you know, Damari Carroll wasn't 100% healthy. That was another big blow. So I think that if we would have had those guys and we would have been, you know, healthy, I think it could have. I don't know if we would have gone past the Eastern Conference Finals, but I think that it would have been a much different Eastern Conference Finals.
Did you think that fully healthy Cleveland was still better than you that year?
Well, going back on it, I know that Cleveland had Love hurt as well. So, I mean, they weren't fully healthy as well. But I think that even if they had Love and with our group, I felt like we could have gave him a much better series. And who knows, fully healthy, I really would have took my chances.
Is it hard to let stuff like that go for you? You know, when you accomplish, especially a season like that, when you get to the 60 wins and you are the best team in the Eastern Conference that year during the season?
Well, I mean, you know, you reflect on it. It was good, but you can't linger on that. Like, you know, I've definitely moved forward. I've learned, taken some things from it. I learned from it. And being around those players and that group has made me a better player.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
Hi, boys and girls. It's Tony Kornheiser reminding you to subscribe and listen to my daily podcast, where we talk about everything from sports to politics to the impending animal revolution. And remember, you can listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play.
Nowadays in the NBA, when a guy is entering his free agent year, that's all anybody wants to talk about. So you were hearing about your free agency, you know, probably October, November of last year with Atlanta. When did it hit you that you might actually leave there? Was it at any point during the season? Was it after the season? When did it first start to creep into your mind?
Honestly, it was right after our season was over. You know, we just lost to Cleveland, and it was the same way as the year before. You know, we got swept, and I really, you know, started to think if Atlanta was the place for me, you know, for the future. And I was in a difficult position because, I got along great with my teammates there, and I have a lot of respect for Coach Bud. And I just kind of came at a crossroads. I was like, well, you know, I'm 30 now. I would like to be part of a team that can compete and win a championship. And I was just kind of faced with that dilemma, with that situation. So that's when I started to think about, you know, what was out there for me for free agency.
Did any of the stuff that happened prior to that, including the Danny Ferry stuff, was that influential in your decision making?
No. I have tremendous respect for Danny. He was always really good to me. But that was something that was kind of left behind, and we were moving forward. I was moving forward, and that had nothing to do with that.
So compare college recruiting to professional recruiting for me. Because now it's become more than money, right? You're being pitched about his, you know, kind of college life.
Yeah, no, you're being pitched. You know, I think in college, I mean, I think in the NBA, you've been recruiting in college. You have an understanding of what an NBA recruiting it's going to be like. I think the only difference here is that, you know, for my visits, I had, you know, former players and current players and owners and things like that coming to see you and trying to, you know, I think when the Celtics came to see me, it was very straightforward. You know, we talked about basketball. We talked about the tradition and the history and everything and how we can make an impact, you know, building into the future. And that's, you know, that's what was sold to me.
Was there a part of the recruiting process, whether it's from the Celtics or somebody else, where you thought it was kind of surreal, like maybe somebody that came into the meeting with you or some part of the pitch?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was, you know, fortunate enough, you know, I met with Houston, with the Rockets, and Clyde Drexler and Hakeem Olajuwon were there at the meeting, and I was, you know, I was definitely in awe. I was very in awe. My dad, my dad couldn't believe it. He's a huge Hakeem fan, and that was a special moment.
So, what was it that about Boston that sold you? Because the money was probably close to the same in a lot of these places, and
yeah, and that's something that, you know, the money was the same. It wasn't like, you know. For me, at the end of the day, it was about I looked at Coach Stevens and you know, Danny and what they're building here. I looked at the players around me and the flexibility and the future that the franchise has, and I just felt that if, you know, to win a championship and work towards that, I felt like I had a great opportunity to be here and to be, you know, to start working towards that and be a part of that. So that's what ultimately made my decision easy.
Did Atlanta's decision to sign Dwight Howard change your mind about anything at all?
No. I mean, I you know, that had nothing to do with it, even though that at the end of the day, it came down to, you know, Boston and Atlanta. Those were the two teams that, you know, that I was really, you know, weighing on. And you know, for me, it was difficult because, you know, I've been in Atlanta for so long, and I had great relationships there. But at the end of the day, I was just looking at my future. That was that.
What was it about Boston's future that made it more appealing? Because the Celtics were a good team, you know, certainly not a great team at that point. What was specifically appealing to you about this organization?
Yeah, I just felt like, you know, like, the team here is growing, it's developing. It's a young team, but guys like Avery Bradley and Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder and guys like that I feel like have grown, but have a lot of growing to do. And you know, you have Marcus Smart, Olynyk, like there's just a lot of guys, and you know, I just feel like here we. You know, they had the vision about, you know, getting to that next level. And it was something that, you know, that really appealed to me.
So clear a couple things up for me. Houston, how close were you to going there?
No, I think it was, you know, I considered them, but I think that, you know, it was Atlanta and Boston, the two teams at the end of the day that I was looking at.
And there was a report out there that you had thought about Oklahoma City if Durant and Westbrook were going to stay.
Well, there was a lot of stuff going around. I mean, you know, it was a bunch of different stories. There was a lot of possibilities. And you know, at the end of the day, I just felt like I ended up making the right decision and being here.
You've talked about the adjustment to playing in this team, in this role. For people that don't really understand, you know, what that adjustment is, how difficult is it for a player to go from one system under Mike Budenholzer to a different one under Brad Stevens?
No, it's been very different, and you know, not only the system, but you know, getting used to the players, you know, I was fortunate enough for many years to play with, you know, with a guy, for example, like Jeff Teague, you know, and you know, he was a guy that, you know, always knew how to, you know, find me in different times, and we built the chemistry. Then Paul Millsap came along, and we built chemistry and Korver, and it was kind of like that. And you know, the more games that we play, the more confident we were. And you know, here we're doing that, but it takes time to really perfect it. You know, I'm I want to be as the best that we can as a group. I want us to be the best that we can as a group. And right now we're good, but I feel like we can get so much better, with the chemistry and everything. And that's only going to come with the more games that we play and the more comfortable we are with each other.
You mentioned Teague, and now you're playing with Isaiah for the most part. What's something that you and Isaiah are better at now, as we're in early January, that maybe you were adapting to in October, November?
I just think that, we're really, I'm really understanding more and more how he plays, and I'm trying to make sure that, I make the game easy for him, and that I'm in the right places and positions to make plays when he delivers the ball to me, and it's just amazing how he's able to find me a lot of the times out in the perimeter. When he's driving and penetrating, he's able to kick the ball out and things like that. So I think that for me, it's just really finding my spots with Isaiah, and it's taken me a little time, but I think we're making good progress.
And along those same lines, is there another player on this team that you feel like you've made good progress with playing alongside, whether it's, certain offensive sets, defensive schemes, something like that?
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I mean, Avery Bradley, he's a guy that has made the game easy for me. He's somebody that I feel like me and him are work together real well, playing two-man games. And with Amir, with Amir Johnson, he's a guy that plays really hard. And then on offense, he moves really well without the ball. He moves better than people, I guess, give him credit for. He's the kind of guy that, I get the ball and I'm making a move, and he's reading me the whole time. So it's like at the end of the day, he's getting dump off, passes from me, or he's always making the right read or getting out of my way so I can go score the ball. So, he's somebody that I've quickly developed chemistry with.
Do you consider yourself a center?
No, I don't. I don't consider myself a center. I know I played it for many years and I did it well. I think I can play both forward, center, and
do you, I'll put it this way. Do you prefer a bigger rebounding type alongside you or a smaller floor spacer alongside you?
Well, I mean, I think that I got into the point in my game that I've been trying to space the floor more. So I would say, that's why, a guy like Amir compliments me because, he's in there, he's banging, he's doing a lot of that stuff, and I can actually, play more in the seams, pop, play more outside. And I think that there are times that I can move to the center and we can go real small and put Jay at the four or Jonas and stuff like that, and I'll play the five, and and I can play in the inside a lot too. I think that that's one of my strengths, that I can play in both positions, and I'm comfortable playing in both positions.
You mentioned what Brad's done to try to make you more comfortable with this team. I mean, how would you describe your first couple of months playing for Brad Stevens, a guy who's really had a pretty meteoric rise in the NBA as a coach?
Yeah, just trying to learn as much as I can from him, and he has really made it, very simple for me. My transition is on the defensive end and on offense. He's, puts the concepts out there and just kind of has really just allowed me to play and just kind of do what I do on the defensive end, be active, do things like that. So it's been really good to have that.
There's a lot of you mentioned the legends that are associated with different teams. This organization has a bunch of them that are still around, both daily and maybe a little bit more sporadically. Who have you interacted with, here from as far as like ex-Celtics that might be around or anybody like that?
Have
you met Bill Russell yet?
I haven't met. Well, I've met Bill in the past.
Okay.
I haven't met him since I've been here. No, I haven't met him since I've been here, and I've met Larry in the past before too. Mm-hmm. But I guess you can kind of throw Danny in there too, right? Because
yeah.
He's one of those. So I interact with him a lot, and there's also there's a few that I've seen from time to time, here and there. But there's so many, legends here.
They're everywhere,
and so many people. Even our trainer Ed, he's been here for. 30 plus years and or even our massage guy and everything. So it's just like literally there's people, you know, there's a lot of the old Celtics still. There's that influence here. And, you know, that's what the Celtics are about.
What were your interactions like with Larry Bird in the past?
Well, very brief.
Okay.
You know, nothing, you know, very brief, but very, you know, a lot of admiration for him.
Have you been, have you been happy with your decision to come here, you know, 3 months in? How would you evaluate that part of it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's, I've been happy. I'm happy. I think that the biggest thing is there's always an adjustment, you know, of everything. You know, when you go in from one place to another, you know, used to everything from, you know, different locker room to, you know, how you travel, you know, teammates and city and just a lot of things that I never had to worry about because I've always been in the same place. So, you know, for me and my family, I feel like people here have made our adjustment easier. It's been difficult because it's a lot of changing. It's a lot of moving parts. But I feel like I'm making the most out of my situation.
Right, and this now. Is, you mentioned at the top, this is a passionate sports town here, and that can, you know, be called tough at times too. I mean, you were, you know, criticized, as crazy it is, for going to the birth of your child a month or so back. I mean, it's a lot different, I think, than Atlanta, because Atlanta is a very laid back kind of sports town to me. I mean, they, you know, they're passionate when you get to the playoffs. But the daily intensity, I would imagine, is a lot different than what you've experienced before.
Yeah. No, it's very different here. You know, like you said, people are more passionate, but one of the things that I've kind of early in my career understood and learned was to kind of, you know, focus on my business, which is go out on the court, perform in practice, do my job the best that I can, and stay out of the media and stay out of everything that has to do with anything, right? And staying out of social media. You know, I'll tweet, I'll use Instagram, but I'm not really reading or getting into what who's saying what or who said whatever. And that has made my life much, much simpler and you know, and better. You know, I think that for me to just focus on my job, you know, making sure that I'm being the best that I can and my teammates and, you know, what can we do to win, you know, definitely helps me a lot more than listening to what everyone is saying about us or whether it's good or bad. You know, even positive pieces, I don't, you know, I'm not really looking at any of that stuff. You know, I just try to focus on, you know, on myself and on my team. And that's made it a lot easier for me because I know that there's a lot of stuff that has come out, but it's not affecting me because I'm not looking into it.
We had Danny Ainge just walk in here, and one of the things people talk about with this team is what's it going to look like in the coming years, whether it's, you know, trades that they may do, the draft picks that they have. I mean, how much did you think about that, about this team might be reshaped in the coming years when you were thinking about signing here?
Yeah, no, I definitely thought about it. You know, those were things that I was aware of. But at the end of the day, you know, my priority is to play basketball, help us win, and kind of focus on the group that we have now. And I feel like we have a good group that we can keep building and growing, and that's my focus. You know, I can't, you know, I'm not going to, you know, they'll make those decisions if they feel like there needs to be some changes, if there needs to be anything, you know, they'll figure that out. And for me, I just have to make sure that I help our group.
One thing I was curious about was, did you try to last second get into the kind of help the Celtics get Durant sweepstakes there? Because you agreed to come, and then there was still that window where Kevin didn't decide. I mean, did you try to help the cause there in any way, or?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had some conversations with him, but nothing, you know, really came about. And I think that he kind of already had his mind made up of what he wanted to do.
Were they good conversations that you had with him, or?
General conversations. I mean, you know, if they would have been good if he would have ended up here.
Before I let you go, this team is now starting to play good basketball, and it's kind of coincided with everyone being healthy, everyone on the court. What the last couple of weeks as this team has put together a bunch of wins, what have you seen? What's been different as you've seen this group get healthy?
Yeah, well, I think number one is, you know, that we are healthy, but two, it's slow, but we're starting to, you know, to understand how to play with each other. Our defense is still the point of emphasis that we still feel like we need to improve a lot more if we're going to, you know, if we're going to do anything as a group. We have to be better defensively and more consistent. I feel like we've really been riding off of Isaiah. Has been extremely hot, really scoring the ball in a different level. And that has certainly, you know, put us in positions, you know, to win a lot of these games. So I think that if we lock in defensively, I think that will put us on another level as a team.
You personally have got to be tired of losing to Cleveland. Yeah. I know it was like, what was it, 11 straight when for Atlanta before they won early in the season. I mean, you don't seem like the kind of guy that gets too angry at a particular team, but you must hate losing to them.
Yeah, no, it's definitely tough. It's been frustrating. So, yeah.
Nothing further on that one.
Yeah.
Well, I know you're busy these days. I appreciate taking some time to join me here on the podcast. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Al Horf for joining the show. A reminder, you can listen to Archive Podcast at iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. If you have time, post a comment, leave us a rating. I really appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.